podcast de Bookalicious et je suis Tara Lenhart. Voici le premier épisode du podcast de Bookalicious. Enfin, il ne s'agit pas vraiment d'un épisode puisque c'est un bonus. Le premier épisode est prêt, mais je ne pouvais résister à l'envie de vous partager avant tout ce bonus incroyable, ce véritable moment de grâce. Il s'agit d'une interview d'une dizaine de minutes avec Dieu en personne, bien plus que Dieu même, puisqu'il s'agit d'une interview de Bret Easton Ellis. Invité d'honneur du FNAC Livre, il rencontrait une nouvelle fois son public français à Paris le 21 septembre pour son White Tour. Je ne vous ferai pas l'affront de vous présenter Bret Easton Ellis, je rappellerai simplement que son dernier livre, White, est publié chez Robert Laffont. Merci au FNAC Livre et aux éditrices de Bret chez Robert Laffont. Un grand merci à Arnaud Laborie de l'agence La Bande pour avoir permis à cette rencontre d'avoir lieu.
Thank you very much for taking of your Parisian time.
You're very welcome.
I would like to ask you, if you were the 21-year-old Bret Easton Ellis who wrote the Less Than Zero, now, today, what would you write about? What would be the topic of your book?
Well, the question does become, would I be writing a book? Or would I be creating a video game? Would I be creating... Well, you know, video games are long-form narratives with many characters. Many situations happen. In many ways, for younger people I know, especially my partner, who's a millennial, that is a novel. Playing a video game is like a long novel that they, quote-unquote, read. So I don't know if I'd be doing that or if I'd be talking about myself on a podcast, have my own podcast, or if I would, I don't know if I would get into film either. Maybe I'd be writing a TV series, but it would be interesting as a 21-year-old now in 2019 if the novel itself would have interested me enough to write a novel. I don't know. I'm unsure.
You would maybe have preferred something more interactive and where... You would directly talk to people.
Yes, because when I was 21, the novel was one of the main ways of interacting with people, of talking to people, of imparting information about maybe a world they didn't know anything about. I mean, often novels acted that way. You read a novel because you didn't know what was going on in Africa or what was happening with teenagers in Los Angeles, and you would almost read novels like news. They'd be a novel, they'd be a story, they'd be fictional characters, but you'd be learning about a milieu, a world that you did not know about. Now, because of the internet, you can find out about any world you want in a click. So I don't know. I don't know if the novel really is for younger people the key mode of expression. That is how I'd answer it. If you really want me to answer it, I suppose I would, if I was going to write Less Than Zero, I don't know, where would I set it? Maybe I'd set it in Los Angeles. I mean, I'm sure there are still, the book is still in print, people still read the book, they still identify with it for some reason. So maybe I'd write the book about Los Angeles, but set now in 2019.
Different, actually just different era, but the same kind of problems, or...
Or maybe some... Times worse problems.
Worse problems. That's what the actual time inspires you or makes you think about are worse problems than what you even described.
It makes me think that my youth at 21 was remarkably uncomplicated compared to, I think, that of today. I mean, we didn't have a lot of options. Life was simpler in many respects, and so I don't think that I think it would be a more complicated book today with a lot more things happening, and you have to realize in Less Than Zero, I mean, the characters have a lot of time on their hand. They're kind of bored. They just hang out a lot. They don't have a phone.
No, they don't.
have the internet. They don't have social networks. So they're kind of creating their own problems among themselves and in what was still an analog age. We weren't anywhere near the digital age yet.
Yes, it's a difference in something like a little less than 30 years or a little bit more than 30 years. We have totally switched?
Well, look, I think less than zero would be only if cell phones, if the iPhone was around, less than zero would be 25 pages, because so much of the rest of the story is trying to call someone, trying to reach them, can't find out where they are. They know immediately where they are. They'd get the money. They'd get out of there, and the book would be 30 pages long. So, I mean, one of the reasons that book is 200 pages long is because no one has an iPhone.
But that's actually you said some nice things about Taolin, and he's quite very much inspired by what you wrote, but with millennial problems, and one of the main characters of his books actually is the cell phone and how people interact with the cell phone.
Right.
And what do you think about this, actually?
Well, what did I...
One of your children.
Well, what do you think I just did? In the cab, coming over, what was I looking at? When I woke up this morning, what was I looking at? What happens when I can't find it? Mm-hmm. Do I panic? Yes, I panic. My whole life seems to be connected to it. It is, in some ways, my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I depend on it to an inordinate degree. I wish I didn't, and I know that the rare times that I'm rushing out of the house and I'm in my car in Los Angeles and I realize I don't have my phone.
Yeah.
I get very angry, I get very frustrated, I think of driving back from wherever I am to go to my apartment, to go up the stairs to get the cell phone. And then I go, I guess I'm just not going to have it today. And I feel good. I feel free. It feels great not to have a cell phone, to go to a movie or to go shopping or to do whatever you have to do, and you don't have that thing that you're constantly looking at, that you're constantly checking for, that you make sure you have. That's its own kind of stress. That's its own kind of stressful thing. So I don't know. I mean, it's the first thing I look at when I get up, and it's the last thing I look at before I go to bed. So I have a very, very intense relationship with it, and that's just the way it is.
Yes, we can't really help about it. And there is one thing you were talking yesterday about the way our generation, the millennials, feel victimized and often trend to emphasize an offense to make it become like a big deal. And have you never felt actually a victim of something or felt victimized? Or how is your relation to victim situation?
Actually, no, I never have had. I've never felt that way. And if I have, I have taken responsibility for it. I don't think I've ever felt like being a victim of someone. I have made some very bad business deals. Mm-hmm. I have dealt with some very shady people. I have to take responsibility for that. Now, I also have never been... Look, I've also gotten into fights when I was younger. Physical fights when I was a teenager. 2, 3, not more than that. Boy stuff, you know. And I was bullied. I was definitely bullied as a kid. I just got up off the ground and I walked away. And rarely did I tell my parents. I mean, no one really did anything about it anyway then when kids got into fights. So you kind of had to process it on your own. And so I'm not patting myself on the back going, oh, good for you, Brett. I'm just saying that is just how it was when I was young. And so I never have felt that way, even with my father, who was a very, let's say, abusive man. What could I do? I mean, do I feel that the only thing that came out of that was I was a victim? No, much more complicated. I became a writer. I began to express myself. That is what I hope people do. I hope people use whatever suffering they have or whenever they've been victimized to step away from that, to refuse to accept the victimization, and maybe create art, maybe create poetry or music or something out of that. I think the constant and incessant display of your victimization and using it as a way to define yourself and to connect with people. Look, I'm an old man. I don't understand that, and it's not something that I can identify with. I think my younger partner kind of does get it better than I do.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, again, there is a question of generation because of lifestyle and of main problems?
Well, see, I think so. My partner, who's 33, doesn't like to believe in generations. He likes to think that we're all the same and that we're all equal and that everyone has similar experiences. That's his utopia vision of life and how life should be. And none of us should be separated by things like generations or even age or even, you know, so he's very progressive about that. I think it's unrealistic. I think there is something that defines his generation and his experiences that are very different from what mine were and what the men of my generation went through, just as the men of my mother's generation and my grandfather's generation. Very different mindsets. There is a difference between silent generation, baby boomer generation, Generation X, and millennials. So I think that's the main difference between my generation looking at victimization and my boyfriend.
Okay. And my last question, not to make you late for your signature, would be, how does it feel to be Bret Easton Ellis?
Well, very different in Paris, where I feel very special. I feel like a very special person in Paris, very different from how I live in Los Angeles. You have to understand, I live as a writer a very solitary existence. It's not lonely at all, but I'm alone a lot in my office, and I live with my partner, and we have a very, very simple life. I work all day, and then at night we watch TV, or maybe we'll go to a movie, whatever that is. I don't socialize that much. Mm-hmm. I see friends for dinner. I do not go to parties. I do not go to screenings. That part of my life is over, and I don't miss it. So I don't really get an opportunity, and I do very few tours. I don't do a lot of touring. I don't do a lot of book festivals. So I don't get this feeling that I'm anybody rather than who I am. I'm not recognized on the streets in Los Angeles at all. If I put a credit card down, maybe in a restaurant, someone will see the name and go, oh. Or if I make a dinner reservation. But it's usually just Bret Ellis. So I don't experience that. Here, however, this past 2 or 3 days is very, very different. And, of course, when you do a book signing and, of course, when you give a talk in front of people. I did 4 television shows yesterday.
Okay.
I mean, that's crazy. That's a very – and when you're on those sets of the TV shows and they usually have a short film about your life and your history, I look at it, I go, what is going on? Who is that person? Why is he dressed this way? What was he doing at 30? What is it? God, I look so young then. I mean, so there is, in some ways, there is the solitary – Bret Ellis, my mother's son or whatever, and then there is this thing, this brand that it walks around and comes to places like Fnac and sells my books. So I just feel old sometimes. I feel very old. I've been around a long time, I realize. First time I was here in Paris was, I don't know, 30 years ago.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
The better part of the man is soon plowed into the soil for compost. By a seeming fate, commonly called necessity, they are employed, as it says in an old book.
Yeah.